Act 4. The Wimpole Street Laboratory. Midnight. Nobody in the room. The clock on the mantelpiece strikes 12. The fire is not alight. It is a summer night. Presently, Higgins and Pickering are heard on the stairs. Higgins calling down to Pickering.
I say, Pick, lock up, will you? I shan't be going out again.
Pickering.
Right. Can Mrs. Pierce go to bed? We don't want anything more, do we?
Higgins.
Lord, no.
Eliza opens the door and is seen on the lighted landing in all the finery in which she has just won Higgins's bet for him. She comes to the hearth and switches on the electric lights there. She is tired. Her pallor contrasts strongly with her dark eyes and hair, and her expression is almost tragic. She takes off her cloak, puts her fan and gloves on the piano, and sits down on the bench, brooding and silent. Higgins, in evening dress, with overcoat and hat, comes in, carrying a smoking jacket, which he has picked up downstairs. He takes off the hat and overcoat, throws them carelessly on the newspaper stand, disposes of his coat in the same way, puts on the smoking jacket, and throws himself wearily into the easy chair at the hearth. Pickering, similarly attired, comes in. He also takes off his hat and overcoat, and is about to throw them on Higgins's, when he hesitates. Pickering.
I say, Mrs. Pierce will row if we leave these things lying about in the drawing-room.
Higgins.
Oh, chuck them over the banisters into the hall. She'll find them there in the morning, and put them away all right. She'll think we were drunk.
Pickering.
We are, slightly.
Are there any letters?
Higgins.
I didn't look.
Pickering takes the overcoats and hats and goes downstairs. Higgins begins half singing, half yawning, an air from La Fanciulla, Del Golden West. Suddenly he stops and exclaims,
I wonder where the devil my slippers are!
Eliza looks at him darkly, then rises suddenly and leaves the room. Higgins yawns again and resumes his song. Pickering returns with the contents of the letterbox in his hand. Pickering.
Only circulars, and this coroneted billy-doo for you.
He throws the circulars into the fender and posts himself on the hearthrug with his back to the grate. Higgins, glancing at the billy-doo.
Moneylender.
He throws the letter after the circulars. Eliza returns with a pair of large down-at-heel slippers. She places them on the carpet before Higgins and sits as before, without a word. Higgins, yawning again.
Oh, Lord! What an evening! What a crew! What a silly tomfoolery!
He raises his shoe to unlace it and catches sight of the slippers. He stops unlacing and looks at them as if they had appeared there of their own accord.
Oh! They're there, are they?
Pickering, stretching himself.
Well, I feel a bit tired. It's been a long day. The garden party, a dinner party, and the reception. Rather too much of a good thing. But you've won your bet, Higgins. Eliza did the trick. And something to spare, eh?
Higgins, fervently.
Thank God it's over.
Eliza flinches violently. But they take no notice of her. And she recovers herself and sits stonily as before. Pickering.
Were you nervous at the garden party? I was. Eliza didn't seem a bit nervous.
Higgins.
Oh, she wasn't nervous. I knew she'd be all right. No, it's the strain of putting the job through all these months that has told on me. It was interesting enough at first, while we were at the phonetics. But after that, I got deadly sick of it. If I hadn't backed myself to do it, I should have chucked the whole thing up 2 months ago. It was a silly notion. The whole thing has been a bore.
Pickering.
Oh, come. The garden party was frightfully exciting. My heart began beating like anything.
Higgins.
Yes, for the first 3 minutes. But when I saw we were going to win hands down, I felt like a bear in a cage, hanging about, doing nothing. The dinner was worse. Sitting gorging there for over an hour with nobody but a damned fool of a fashionable woman to talk to. I tell you, Pickering, never again for me. No more artificial duchesses. The whole thing has been simple purgatory.
Pickering, you've never been broken in properly to the social routine. Strolling over to the piano.
I rather enjoy dipping into it occasionally myself. Makes me feel young again. Anyhow, it was a great success, an immense success.
I was quite frightened once or twice because Eliza was doing it so well. You see, lots of the real people can't do it at all. They're such fools that they think style comes by nature to people in their position, and so they never learn. There's always something professional about doing a thing superlatively well.
Higgins.
Yes, that's what drives me mad. The silly people don't know their own silly business.
Rising.
However, it's over and done with, and now I can go to bed at last without dreading tomorrow.
Eliza's beauty becomes murderous.
Pickering.
I think I shall turn in too. Still, it's been a great occasion, a triumph for you. Good night.
He goes.
Higgins following him.
Good night.
Over his shoulder at the door. Put out the lights, Eliza, and tell Mrs. Pierce not to make coffee for me in the morning. I'll take tea.
He goes out.
Eliza tries to control herself and feel indifferent as she rises and walks across to the hearth to switch off the lights. By the time she gets there, she is on the point of screaming. She sits down in Higgins's chair and holds on hard to the arms. Finally, she gives way and flings herself furiously on the floor, raging. Higgins, in despairing wrath outside.
What the devil have I done with my slippers?
He appears at the door. Liza, snatching up the slippers and hurling them at him, one after the other, with all her force.
There are your slippers, and there! Take your slippers, and may you never have a day's luck with them!
Higgins, astounded. What on earth? He comes to her.
What's the matter? Get up!
He pulls her up.
Anything wrong?
Liza, breathless.
Nothing wrong with you. I've won your bet for you, haven't I? That's enough for you. I don't matter, I suppose.
Higgins.
You won my bet. You, presumptuous insect, I won it. What did you throw those slippers at me for?
Liza.
Because I wanted to smash your face. I'd like to kill you, you selfish brute. Why didn't you leave me where you picked me out of, in the gutter? You thank God it's all over, and that now you can throw me back again there, do you?
She crisps her fingers frantically. Higgins looking at her in cool wonder.
The creature is nervous, after all.
Liza gives a suffocated scream of fury and instinctively darts her nails at his face. Higgins catching her wrists.
Ah, would you? Claws in, you cat. How dare you show your temper to me? Sit down and be quiet.
He throws her roughly into the easy chair. Liza, crushed by superior strength and weight.
What's to become of me? What's to become of me?
Higgins.
How the devil do I know what's to become of you? What does it matter what becomes of you?
Liza.
You don't care. I know you don't care. You wouldn't care if I was dead. I'm nothing to you, not so much as them slippers.
Higgins, thundering.
Those slippers!
Liza, with bitter submission.
Those slippers! I didn't think it made any difference now.
A pause. Eliza, hopeless and crushed. Higgins, a little uneasy. Higgins, in his loftiest manner.
Why have you begun going on like this? May I ask whether you complain of your treatment here?
Liza.
No.
Higgins.
Has anybody behaved badly to you? Colonel Pickering? Mrs. Pierce? Any of the servants?
Liza.
No.
Higgins.
I presume you don't pretend that I have treated you badly.
Liza.
No.
Higgins.
I am glad to hear of it.
He moderates his tone.
Perhaps you're tired after the strain of the day. Will you have a glass of champagne?
He moves towards the door. Liza.
No.
Recollecting her manners.
Thank you.
Higgins, good-humoured again.
This has been coming on for you for some days. I suppose it was natural for you to be anxious about the garden party. But that's all over now.
He pats her kindly on the shoulder. She writhes.
There's nothing more to worry about.
Liza.
No. Nothing more for you to worry about.
She suddenly rises and gets away from him by going to the piano bench, where she sits and hides her face.
Oh, God, I wish I was dead.
Higgins, staring after her, in sincere surprise.
Why? In heaven's name, why?
Reasonably, going to her.
Listen to me, Eliza. All this irritation is purely subjective.
Liza.
I don't understand. I'm too ignorant.
Higgins.
It's only imagination. Low spirits and nothing else. Nobody's hurting you. Nothing's wrong. You go to bed like a good girl and sleep it off. Have a little cry and say your prayers. That will make you comfortable.
Liza.
I heard your prayers. Thank God it's all over.
Higgins, impatiently.
Well, don't you thank God it's all over? Now you're free and can do what you like.
Liza, pulling herself together in desperation.
What am I fit for? What have you left me fit for? Where am I to go? What am I to do? What's to become of me?
Higgins, enlightened, but not at all impressed.
Oh, that's what's worrying you, is it?
He thrusts his hands into his pockets and walks about in his usual manner, rattling the contents of his pockets, as if condescending to a trivial subject out of pure kindness.
I shouldn't bother about it if I were you. I should imagine you won't have much difficulty in settling yourself somewhere or other, though I hadn't quite realised that you were going away.
She looks quickly at him. He does not look at her, but examines the dessert stand on the piano, and decides that he will eat an apple.
You might marry, you know.
He bites a large piece out of the apple and munches it noisily.
See, Eliza, all men are not confirmed old bachelors like me and the Colonel. Most men are the marrying sort, poor devils. And you're not bad looking. It's quite a pleasure to look at you sometimes. Not now, of course, because you're crying and looking as ugly as the very devil. But when you're all right and quite yourself, you're what I should call attractive. That is, to the people in the marrying line, you understand. You go to bed and have a good, nice rest, and then get up and look at yourself in the glass, and you won't feel so cheap.
Eliza again looks at him, speechless, and does not stir. The look is quite lost on him. He eats his apple with a dreamy expression of happiness, as it is quite a good one. Higgins, a genial afterthought occurring to him.
I dare say my mother could find some chap or other who would do very well.
Liza, we were above that, at the corner of Tottenham Court Road. Higgins, waking up.
What do you mean?
Liza, I sold flowers. I didn't sell myself. Now you've made a lady of me, I'm not fit to sell anything else. I wish you'd left me where you found me.
Higgins, slinging the core of the apple decisively into the grate.
Tosh, Eliza! Don't you insult human relations by dragging all this cant about buying and selling into it. You needn't marry the fellow if you don't like him.
Liza,
what else am I to do?
Higgins,
oh, lots of things. What about your old idea of a florist's shop? Pickering could set you up in one. He has lots of money.
Chuckling.
He'll have to pay for all those togs you've been wearing today, and that, with the hire of the jewellery, will make a big hole in £200. Why, 6 months ago, you would have thought it the millennium to have a flower shop of your own. Come, you'll be all right. I must clear off to bed. I'm devilish sleepy.
By the way, I came down for something. I forget what it was.
Liza, your slippers.
Higgins,
oh yes, of course. You shied them at me.
He picks them up and is going out when she rises and speaks to him.
Liza, before you go, sir.
Higgins, dropping the slippers in his surprise at her calling him sir.
Eh?
Liza, do my clothes belong to me or to Colonel Pickering? Higgins, coming back into the room as if her question were the very climax of unreason.
What the devil use would they be to Pickering?
Liza, he might want them for the next girl you pick up to experiment on. Higgins, shocked and hurt.
Is that the way you feel towards us?
Liza,
I don't want to hear anything more about that. All I want to know is whether anything belongs to me. My own clothes were burnt.
Higgins,
but what does it matter? Why need you start bothering about that in the middle of the night?
Liza,
I want to know what I may take away with me. I don't want to be accused of stealing.
Higgins, now deeply wounded.
Stealing? You shouldn't have said that, Eliza. That shows a want of feeling.
Liza,
I'm sorry. I'm only a common, ignorant girl, and in my station I have to be careful. There can't be any feelings between the like of you and the like of me. Please will you tell me what belongs to me and what doesn't?
Higgins, very sulky.
You may take the whole damned houseful if you like. Except the jewels. They're hired. Will that satisfy you?
He turns on his heel and is about to go in extreme dudgeon. Liza, drinking in his emotion like nectar and nagging him to provoke a further supply.
Stop! Please!
She takes off her jewels.
Will you take these to your room and keep them safe? I don't want to run the risk of their being missing.
Higgins, furious,
hand them over.
She puts them into his hands.
If these belong to me instead of to the jeweller, I'd ram them down your ungrateful throat.
He perfunctorily thrusts them into his pockets, unconsciously decorating himself with the protruding ends of the chains. Liza, taking a ring off.
This ring isn't the jeweller's. It's the one you bought me, in Brighton.
I don't want it now. Higgins dashes the ring violently into the fireplace and turns on her so threateningly that she crouches over the piano with her hands over her face and exclaims, "Don't you hit me!" Higgins,
"Hit you?
You infamous creature! How dare you accuse me of such a thing? It is you who have hit me. You have wounded me to the heart."
Liza, thrilling with hidden joy. "I'm glad. I've got a little of my own back anyhow."
Higgins, with dignity in his finest professional style. "You have caused me to lose my temper, a thing that has hardly ever happened to me before. I prefer to say nothing more tonight. I am going to bed."
Liza, pertly. "You'd better leave a note for Mrs. Pierce about the coffee, for she won't be told by me."
Higgins, formally.
"Damn Mrs. Pierce, and damn the coffee, and damn you."
And wildly,
"Damn my own folly in having lavished my hard-earned knowledge and the treasure of my regard and intimacy on a heartless guttersnipe."
He goes out with impressive decorum and spoils it by slamming the door savagely. Eliza goes down on her knees on the hearthrug to look for the ring. When she finds it, she considers for a moment what to do with it. Finally, she flings it down on the dessert stand and goes upstairs in a tearing rage. The furniture of Eliza's room has been increased by a big wardrobe and a sumptuous dressing table. She comes in and switches on the electric light. She goes to the wardrobe, opens it, and pulls out a walking dress, a hat, and a pair of shoes, which she throws on the bed. She takes off her evening dress and shoes, then takes a padded hanger from the wardrobe, adjusts it carefully in the evening dress, and hangs it in the wardrobe, which she shuts with a slam. She puts on her walking shoes, her walking dress and hat. She takes her wristwatch from the dressing table and fastens it on. She pulls on her gloves, takes her vanity bag, and looks into it to see that her purse is there, before hanging it on her wrist. She makes for the door. Every movement expresses her furious resolution. She takes a last look at herself in the glass. She suddenly puts out her tongue at herself, then leaves the room, switching off the electric light at the door. Meanwhile, in the street outside, Freddie Eynsford Hill, lovelorn, is gazing up at the second floor, in which one of the windows is still lighted. The light goes out. Freddy.
"Good night, darling. Darling. Darling."
Eliza comes out, giving the door a considerable bang behind her.
Liza. "Whatever are you doing here?"
Freddy.
"Nothing. I spend most of my nights here. It's the only place where I'm happy. Don't laugh at me, Miss Doolittle."
Liza.
"Don't call me Miss Doolittle. Do you hear? Liza's good enough for me."
She breaks down and grabs him by the shoulders.
"Freddy, you don't think I'm a heartless guttersnipe, do you?"
Freddy.
"Oh, no, no, darling. How can you imagine such a thing? You are the loveliest, dearest."
He loses all self-control and smothers her with kisses. She, hungry for comfort, responds. They stand there in one another's arms. An elderly police constable arrives. Constable, scandalized.
"Now then, now then, now then!"
They release each other hastily. Freddy.
"Sorry, Constable. We've only just become engaged."
They run away. The constable shakes his head, reflecting on his own courtship and on the vanity of human hopes.
He moves off in the opposite direction with slow, professional steps. The flight of the lovers takes them to Cavendish Square. There they halt to consider their next move.
Liza, out of breath.
He didn't half give me a fright, that copper, but you answered him proper.
Freddy,
I hope I haven't taken you out of your way. Where were you going?
Liza,
to the river.
Freddy,
what for?
Liza,
to make a hole in it.
Freddy, horrified.
Liza, darling, what do you mean? What's the matter?
Liza, never mind. Doesn't matter now.
There's nobody in the world now but you and me, is there?
Freddy, not a soul. They indulge in another embrace and are again surprised by a much younger constable.
Second constable. Now then, you two, what's this? Where do you think you are? Move along here, double quick.
Freddy.
As you say, sir, double quick.
They run away again and are in Hanover Square before they stop for another conference.
Freddy.
I had no idea the police were so devilishly prudish.
Liza.
It's their business to hunt girls off the streets.
Freddy.
We must go somewhere. We can't wander about the streets all night.
Liza.
Can't we? I think it'd be lovely to wander about forever.
Freddy.
Oh, darling.
They embrace again, oblivious of the arrival of a crawling taxi. It stops.
Taximan. Can I drive you and the lady anywhere, sir?
They start asunder. Liza.
Oh, Freddy, a taxi. The very thing.
Freddy.
But damn it, I've no money.
Liza.
I have plenty. The Colonel thinks you should never go out without £10 in your pocket. Listen, we'll drive about all night, and in the morning I'll call on old Mrs. Higgins and ask her what I ought to do. I'll tell you all about it in the cab. And the police won't touch us there.
Freddy.
Right-ho. Ripping.
To the taxi man.
Wimbledon Common.
They drive off.